You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. This is a reading of a book by Rudolf Steiner entitled How to Know Higher Worlds, A Modern Path of Initiation. This is the newest Christopher Bamford translation. Chapter 4, entitled Practical Considerations. Paragraph 1. Educating our feelings, thoughts, and moods in the ways indicated in the sections on preparation, illumination, and initiation fashions an organization in our soul and our spirit similar to the one produced by nature in the physical body. Without such a training, our soul and spirit remain unstructured masses. In this state, clairvoyant seers perceive them as intertwined, spiraling, cloud-like vortices. These have a dull glow and are generally sensed as reddish and red-brown or red-yellow in color. After esoteric training, however, the vortices display an orderly structure and are seen as shining spiritually in yellow-green or green-blue colors. We achieve such a regular structure of soul and spirit, and thereby higher knowledge, too, when we order our feelings, thoughts, and moods, just as nature orders our bodily functions, enabling us to see, hear, digest, breathe, speak, and so forth. The order we create in this way gradually enables us to breathe and see with the soul, and to hear, speak, and so on, with the spirit. Paragraph number 2. The present chapter will examine in greater detail some practical approaches to esoteric development that are part of the higher education of soul and spirit. These practices are such that basically any of us can adopt them, regardless of any other rules we are following. Indeed, anyone who follows these additional suggestions will advance quite far in esoteric science. Paragraph 3. We must strive especially to train our capacity for patience. Every stirring of impatience paralyzes, even destroys, the higher faculties latent within us. We should not desire or expect to achieve boundless insights into the higher worlds overnight. For then, as a rule, they will certainly not come to us. Instead, contentment with even our smallest achievement, along with calm and detachment, should increasingly fill our souls. Certainly, as students, we are understandably impatient to see the results of our efforts. Yet, we can achieve nothing until we can master our impatience. On the other hand, merely to fight against impatience in the ordinary ways does no good. It only strengthens it. We would only be deceiving ourselves, and our impatience would sink its roots deeper into our souls. Only if we surrender ourselves repeatedly to a particular thought, making it completely our own, can we achieve anything. This thought is, quote, I must do everything I can for the education of my soul and spirit, but I will wait calmly until the higher powers consider me worthy of illumination. Close quote. Once this thought has become so powerful in us that it has become part of our character, then we are on the right path. Before long, this new character trait puts its outward signature upon us. Our gaze becomes calm, our eye, EYE, steady, our movements confident, our decisions definite. Any nervousness we previously felt gradually disappears. At this point, certain apparently insignificant little, in quotes, rules must be observed. For example, let us say someone offends us. Previously, before esoteric training, we would have turned our feelings against the offender. Irritation and anger would have bubbled up within us. Now that we are on the path to higher knowledge, however, the thought immediately comes to us, quote, "This insult does not alter my true worth." Close quote. Then we do what needs to be done, calmly and with detachment, rather than out of anger. This does not mean that we simply swallow insults. Rather, we should be as calm and confident in responding to insults directed at us as we would if we acted on behalf of someone else who had been insulted. We must always bear in mind that esoteric learning does not occur through great outer events, but rather through quiet, subtle inner changes in our lives of thought and feeling. Paragraph 4. Patience has the effect of attracting the treasures of higher knowledge. Impatience repels them. Haste and unrest achieve nothing in the higher realms of existence. Above all, longing and craving must be silenced. These are soul qualities in the face of which all higher knowledge shyly retreats. Precious as higher knowledge is, if it is to come to us, we must not long for it. Moreover, if we wish it only for our own ends, we will never attain it. This requires, in the first place, that we be honest with ourselves in the depths of the soul. We can no longer have any illusions about ourselves. We must look our own mistakes, weaknesses, and shortcomings in the eye with inner truthfulness. Each time we find an excuse for a weakness, we place an obstacle before us on our upward path. Such obstacles can be removed only by becoming enlightened about ourselves. There is but one way to overcome failings and weaknesses, to see them for what they are, with inner truthfulness. All that lies dormant in the human soul can be awakened. Even intuition and reason can be improved if calmly and detachedly we become clear why we are weak in these areas. Such self-knowledge, of course, is difficult. The temptation to deceive oneself is enormous. But if we make a habit of being honest with ourselves, the doors to greater insight open for us. Paragraph 5. As esoteric students, we must let all curiosity vanish from us. As far as possible, we must lose the habit of asking questions simply to satisfy our own inquisitiveness. We must learn to ask only those questions that serve to perfect our being for the sake of evolution. Neither our delight in learning nor our devotion to it should in any way be diminished by this. On the contrary, we should listen with rapt attention to anything that serves this end and seek every opportunity to practice such devotion. Paragraph 6. Esoteric development requires, above all, the education of our life of wishes and aspirations. This does not mean that we should have no wishes or desires. If we are to attain something, we must first wish for it, and our wishes will always find fulfillment if a special kind of force lies behind them. This force or power arises from right knowledge. Quote, "Do not aspire to something until you know what is right in a given domain." Close quote. This is one of the golden rules for the student of esotericism. If we are wise, we will first learn to understand the laws of the world. Then our wishes will become forces able to realize themselves. The following is a clear example. Certainly many people wish to experience for themselves something of their life before birth. But such aspirations remain futile and pointless if spiritual scientific study has not given them insight into the most subtle and intimate details of the essential nature of what is eternal. If they have really achieved such insight, and now want to proceed further in their understanding, then their aspiration, refined and purified, will help them to do so. Paragraph 7. It is no good saying, quote, "I really want to know about my past life, and for this I will even study and practice," close quote. Rather, we must be ready to give up all such desires and must renounce them completely. We must learn to learn without ulterior motive. We must be able to rejoice in and be devoted to what we learn for its own sake. Only in this way can we have an aspiration that brings about its realization. Paragraph 8. Whenever I am angry or irritated, I build a wall around me in the soul world, and the forces that should develop the eyes of my soul cannot approach me. If, for example, someone annoys me, he or she sends a soul current into the soul world. But I cannot see this current as long as I am still capable of anger. My anger hides it from me. This is not to say that if I master my anger, I will immediately perceive such soul or astral phenomena. For that I must first develop an inner eye, EYE, for my soul. Each of us possesses such an eye in rudimentary form, but it remains ineffective so long as we are still capable of anger. Not that it appears as soon as we have begun to combat the anger in ourselves. Rather, we must continue on, struggling patiently with our anger, until one day we notice that this inner eye in the soul has opened. Anger is not the only obstacle to the perception of astral phenomena that we must struggle against. Many people become impatient or skeptical if, after having struggled for years to overcome certain traits, clairvoyant seeing still does not manifest. Such people have simply cultivated some qualities while allowing others to grow all the more unhindered. The gift of seeing arises only when we have suppressed all the traits hindering the emergence of the latent faculties corresponding to them. Admittedly, the beginnings of clairvoyance or clairaudience may appear earlier, but then they are like tender young shoots, vulnerable to all possible errors, and can easily die away if not carefully cultivated and tended. Paragraph 9. In addition to anger and irritation, we must also struggle against other traits, such as fearfulness, superstition, prejudice, vanity, ambition, curiosity, the urge to gossip, and the tendency to discriminate on the basis of such outer characteristics as social status, gender, race, and so on. We may have difficulty in understanding that the struggle against such traits has anything to do with increasing our cognitive abilities. Yet every occultist knows that much more depends on these things than on our ability to expand our intelligence and practice artificial exercises. Misunderstandings can easily arise if, for example, we believe that the injunction to overcome fear means becoming foolhardy, or that to fight against discrimination based on social status or race means becoming blind to the differences among people. The fact is that we learn to recognize these differences for what they are only when we are no longer caught up in prejudice. Even in ordinary life, fear of a thing prevents us from seeing it properly. In this sense, racial prejudice prevents us from seeing into a human soul. The esoteric student must take such ordinary common sense and perfect it inwardly with great sensitivity and precision. Paragraph 10. We place an obstacle in the path of our esoteric development whenever we say something without first having carefully refined and purified it in our thoughts. This can best be made clear by an example. If someone says something to me that I must respond to, I must make an effort to pay more attention to the other person's beliefs, feelings, and even prejudices than to anything I myself might add to the conversation at that moment. In other words, if one is on an occult path, one must dedicate oneself conscientiously to schooling an impeccable sense of tact or delicacy. We must learn to gauge the significance for another person of having his or her opinion contradicted by ours. This does not mean that we should hold back our opinions. There is no question of that. But we should listen to the other person as carefully as possible and formulate our response on the basis of what we have heard. Once again, it is a question of a single thought arising in us when we are in such situations. We know that we are on the right path when this thought lives within us so strongly that it becomes part of our character. This thought is, quote, "It does not matter if what I think differs from what the other person thinks. What matters is that as a result of what I can contribute to the conversation, the other discovers what is right out of themselves." Close quote. Permeating ourselves with thoughts of this kind seals our character and conduct with the mark of gentleness. Such gentleness is one of the main methods of esoteric schooling. Gentleness removes obstacles, opening our soul and spirit organs. But harshness, callousness, frightens away the soul forms that should awaken the eyes of the soul. Paragraph 11. As we develop gentleness, another trait begins to form in our souls: quiet attention to all the subtleties of soul life surrounding us. Together with the utter stillness of our own soul's activity. If we achieve this, then what is taking place in the soul life around us helps our own soul unfold and grow organically, just as sunlight helps plants to flourish. Thus, patient gentleness and stillness open the soul to the world of souls, and our spirit to the country of spirits. Quote, "Abide in calm single-mindedness and solitude. Close your senses to all that they brought you before you entered on the path of esoteric training. Bring all the thoughts that habitually ebbed and flowed within you to rest. Become perfectly still and inwardly silent. And wait patiently for the higher worlds to fashion the eyes and ears of your soul. Do not expect to see and hear in the worlds of soul and spirit right away. For what you are doing now is merely a contribution to the training of your higher senses. Not until you have these senses will you be able to see with the eyes of the soul and hear with the ears of the spirit. Once you have been established for a while in calm and solitude, then go about your ordinary daily work. Have this thought deeply imprinted within you. One day when I am ready for it, I shall receive what I am to receive. Therefore, do not be tempted to attract to yourself anything of the higher powers through sheer self-will. Close quote. Such are the instructions that every esoteric student receives from his or her teacher at the beginning of the path. If we follow these instructions, we shall perfect ourselves. If we do not follow them, then all our efforts will be in vain. They are not hard to follow if we have patience and constancy. There are no other obstacles than those that we ourselves put in our way. And we can avoid these if we really want to. This must be emphasized repeatedly, because many people have a quite false idea of the difficulties of the esoteric path. It is, in a certain sense, easier to take the first steps on this path than it is to cope with the most mundane problems of daily life without the help of esoteric training. Only such information is communicated in this book as poses no kind of danger to the health of body or soul. There are, of course, other approaches that lead more quickly to the same goal, but such faster ways have nothing to do with the path presented here, because they have certain human consequences that are considered undesirable to anyone experienced in esoteric practices. Since bits of information about these other ways are at times made public, an explicit warning must be sounded against them. For reasons known only to an initiate, such practices can never be described openly and in their true form. The fragments that appear here and there cannot lead to anything positive, but will only undermine health, happiness, and peace of mind. If we do not wish to entrust ourselves to dark powers, whose true nature and origin we do not know, we shall do well to leave such other approaches alone. Paragraph 12. At this point, something may be said concerning the environment in which the exercises of our esoteric training should be practiced. This has a certain importance, yet it must be understood that the requirements vary from person to person. Someone practicing esoterically in an environment entirely pervaded by selfish interests, such as is found in the modern struggle for survival, should be aware that such interests affect the development of one's soul organs. The inner laws of these organs are, of course, strong enough to prevent such influences from causing real harm. A lily cannot turn into a thistle, no matter how inappropriate its surroundings. Nor can the eyes of the soul develop into something other than what they were intended to be, even when they are worked upon by the self-seeking interests of our modern cities. Nevertheless, whatever our circumstances, it is good to practice the exercises whenever possible in the quiet peacefulness, inner dignity, and charm of nature. The ideal situation would be to pursue our esoteric training among green plants and sunny mountains, surrounded by the loveliness of nature's simplicity. This would produce a harmony in our inner organs that would never be possible in modern cities. In other words, a person who has grown up surrounded by fragrant pines, snowy peaks, and the quiet bustle of forest animals and insects is better prepared for esoteric work than the person born in the city. Yet none of us, even if we must live in a city, should fail to nourish the organs developing in their soul and spirit with the inspired teachings of spiritual science. If we cannot see the forests turning green day by day each spring, we should at least nourish our hearts with the lofty teachings of the Bhagavad Gita, the Gospel of St. John, and Thomas a Kempis, and with the findings of spiritual science. Many paths lead to the summit of insight, but it is essential to choose the right one. A person well versed in esoteric practices can say much about these paths that may seem peculiar to the uninitiated. For example, we may have advanced quite far along the esoteric way. We may be standing, as it were, on the threshold, where soul eyes and spirit ears open. Then we are lucky enough to take a trip across the ocean. Seeing the sea calm or stormy, as the case may be, the scales fall from the eyes of the soul, and suddenly we are able to see. We become seers. Another student at a similar point in his or her development may be hit by a hard stroke of fate that would paralyze the strength and undermine the energy of any ordinary person. Because the student is on the esoteric path, it becomes the opportunity for illumination. Again, we may persevere patiently for years without noticeable results. Then suddenly, as we sit in silent meditation in our room, we find ourselves surrounded by a spiritual light. The walls disappear and become transparent to the soul. A new world spreads out before our eyes, which now see, sounding forth for the ears of our spirit, which now hear. The end of chapter 4.